What's up? What's up? A little bit of music to get everybody pumped. So excited to have you here today. Welcome back to another episode of If You Know, You Know, the show for Web3 creators and enthusiasts. I am your host, Belle, and each week I'm joined by Web3 experts to bring you the latest trends, opportunities, and perspectives from the creators who are shaping the future of technology and art. Nothing we ever say is ever financial advice, and it's always super important to do your own research. If this is your first time joining us, we do this show live on X every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, but you can also find it on any of your favorite streaming platforms. If You Know, You Know is powered by Tao BRC, and I'm about to pin the post where you can find all of the instructions on how to get today's Space Caps POAP. Every week, we have a new POAP dedicated to the speaker of that week. Today is OSF. Super excited about that. Go up in just a second. I'm going to be pinning it up so you can get the instructions. We have an awesome show today. I'm so excited about this one. Two of the people that I highly respect and admire in the space for different and very similar reasons. Cannot wait to get into this conversation. Ovi, better known as OSF, is one of the top founders, artists, and just all around like thought leaders in the space. And you already know that if you follow him, you know a little bit about what he posts and what he talks about. And for damn sure, we're going to be picking his brain today on what is happening with Pepe Meme Coin. Because your girl wants to know. But first, I'm super happy to welcome Roger to come into the show. Roger is the founder of Artifacts Project, host of Future of Art. And if you are like me, then you have your notifications on for his amazing, amazing 24 hours of art post. 24 hours, it's plural, of art post. Such a pleasure to have you on, Roger. I am so happy that you were able to join us today. I posted a few weeks ago saying that I have notifications on for you. You and Mondo's posts to me are like the newsletter slash posts that you have to have on notifications if you're in the space and want to keep up with everything, because everything moves entirely too quickly. And I am so grateful to have you update us in real time and every single day. Roger, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you so much. What an introduction. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on your show. And of course, side by side with OSF, big fan, much respect. I think you did that intro really, really well as well. So can't wait to hear him speak.
Tell me about it. I am super excited. I've been trying to get OSF onto the show for quite a long time. He is one of the things that we're going to talk about today is he is a master of everything. On his feed on his Twitter, he says master of none, and I'm like, yeah, no, we're gonna get into this because he is in absolutely everything. It was hard to to write down just one sentence, so we are definitely gonna get into it. But Roger, I want to kick off this show to do two things. Number one, art is the name of the game always in the NFT space and in what we live in, every single day. But also, Obi just got off of his other show. This is his third show of the day. I'm sure that he is parched. I'm sure that he needs a second to drink some water. So, Obi, I got you. Before we get into,
Appreciate that.
yes, of course. Of course. Before we get into your portion, Roger, introduce yourself. Everybody here should already know who you are, but I did my quick introduction. Why don't you talk to us just a little bit more about who you are, what you've done, and how in the heck did we get so lucky to have the 24 hours of art?
I appreciate you. So here's where I've honed it in lately, because I started to do a few new things recently, and one of those things is a throwback to something I used to do. But how I say is it's like this. I'm here for the art. Okay, make that very, very plain. And I do really three things within the context of the art. I report, I converse, and I create. So the reporting is the newest of those three things. And that is what you mentioned, 24 hours of art. So 6 out of every 7 days of the week, I put a post on X. I do want to let everyone know, because I haven't done the best job of advertising it yet. I have a free newsletter as well. And the important thing about that is that every single reference in the report is linked. So you can get right to the artwork, right to the artist, explore your own context. And that's very, very important. So that's rdreport.substack.com. But yeah, so 6 out of 7 days, I am on X with this report. I lead it off every morning right around 7 a.m. Eastern time. And then on the conversation side, I really value the long form organic dialogue. So think of that as the more evergreen, you know, let's see where this goes versus the certainty of the statistical reporting, right? So I run The Future of Art. That's Thursdays at 1 p.m. And then that is also a podcast where I bring on a lot of amazing artists and innovators. And for those who don't know, that's something I did for a long, long time with NFT Origin Stories, a brand that I co-created with Parrot, another fantastic artist in the space. Tons and tons of interviews to explore with Beeple and Gary Vee and Raf Grossetti and so many more amazing people. So that is the conversation side of it. And then the create side is artifacts. So that's my team. That's my squad. That's my family. We, as we put it, are on the edge of Web 3D. So it's really the intersection of fine art and 3D objects. And so we've been exploring putting them in metaverses. We have an Apple app out now. It's a great party trick, by the way. It's called Artifex Viewer, Artifex. Highly suggest getting it. But we've created 52 and counting 3D models, 40 for our core collection, 7 as part of a time collaboration. We did the first 3 Mad Dog Jones helmets in collaboration with Lucidia and done a few other cool things along the way as well. So that's me. I report, I converse, and I create, and it's all about the art.
That's amazing. That's so, there's so much to, you know, to report on, and there's so much to keep up with. If you could narrow it down to 2, because I would love to, for you to give us a recap, you know, of what's going on, what you have your eye on right now, but who is inspiring you right now? Maybe 2 artists that you could pick that if we haven't heard of them before, who do you have your eye on right now?
Oof. Well, number one, I want to let you know, I prepared you a Blitz 10. I got a Blitz 10 list for you. But let's see. I could go so many different ways with that. 2 other artists are in that Blitz list, so I'll keep them there. I actually want to focus on the crowd here. And there's 2 people in the crowd that I'm focused on. Not you, OSF. You're in the Blitz list too, so I'll save you for later as well. But the 2 artists I would say are Ryan Coatmans. Had a chance to interview Ryan recently. He actually was just with Emlo hosting a podcast over there, co-hosting a podcast over there. Ryan, if you don't know, please get to know. He is, how do I describe? I mean, Ryan can better describe himself, but he travels all over the place. He has a photography background. He's a visionary. He looks at things from a bird's eye view. That's really how I think about Ryan now. And man, just go. I'm not going to say anything more. He's in the crowd. I hope everyone here follows him and immediately deep dives the artwork. And then the last little fun fact is, of course, he's the artist that Jim Carrey collected. I save that for last because it's irrelevant to how talented and exceptional his body of work is, but you still should know that fun fact. Rocket Girl is the other one. Rocket Girl has been dancing around this report almost every day. I said to Rocket Girl, if I don't see you on the report, it's actually quite a shocking day. And if she's not on the report, it's curating this or appearing over there or doing that. And so just someone that I've been more and more impressed with as time has gone on. So I would highlight those 2 for you.
That is amazing. Thank you for that. One thing that I, for sure, I'm following both of them and Rocket Girl in particular. You know what makes me really happy about that one? Rocket Girl is an amazing artist completely, but also a tremendous community member just in the NFT space completely. Like Rocket Girl, I remember seeing her PFP and her name for a long time. I'm sure that she was one of the very first listeners that we did with NFT Girl and you know, with Belle. For sure, I've seen her so many times. And more recently, when I see her to not just talk about who she is, but just, you know, focus 100% on the art, it makes me happy, right? It's one of those things that's like, oh, there you go. It's your moment to shine even more than what you have been within the circles that I've been seeing you shine in. So awesome. Roger, who else is on that list?
All right, you want the 10? Should we do it?
Yes, Liz, let's
all right,
do it.
Here's the blitz, just for you. Let's do it. 10 things split between really mainly today, but some there's hot off the presses stuff and a little bit of a throwback to yesterday as well. So number one on this list, I'm not going to say too much about it because it's his show basically. So I just want to lean into it. I just want to tap it. And I want to say OSF launches prediction editions. So he'll get into the fight, his training, all that good stuff. But hot off the presses was round 1 KO. The first of those editions was available to rect holders and RSVPers of last week's rec show. It minted 69 editions at 0.069 ETH. Its current floor is 0.125 ETH. 0 royalties, which is awesome and interesting. And that's the outcome, by the way, of the fight that I'm rooting for, OSF. I'll leave the rest to you when you get on. All right, item number two, Bitcoin surge out in the wild equals Bitcoin NFT news. We saw two things. We saw Rip Cash sell five Bitcoin, just about $170,000. It was a quartet of collectors that stepped in to collect them. Really amazing stuff. Was super patient with those pieces and achieved a really great outcome. The other piece of Bitcoin NFT news was Beeple. Beeple's first ever open editions. That was a trio, by the way. One of them, Bull Run, an edition count of 271, released in December 2020, sold for 10 ETH yesterday. Number three, other high sales, Artblocks Fidenza. The first one this month sells for 40.5 wrapped ETH. Item number four, crypto volatility equals a step back for stables. And I'm using stables a little tongue in cheek, call Chromie Squiggles the stable coin of the NFT space. They had been holding a 10 ETH floor within a decimal point one way or the other for quite some time. They took an expected step back. When you see crypto volatility, especially to the upside, the stables will take a little step back. They did about 15% to 8.5 ETH. Number five, that's more about time, place, and circumstance than anything else, because Chromie Squiggle creator Snowfro is still a legend and hot off the presses today with AOI and the Velocity series mints out the remaining 845 editions of that series at 0.18 ETH each, and they're doing quite well. Item number six, the pass that's responsible for that, the Velocity series Velocity Pass, trades down as expected. Hey, when something that pass gets you ends up going out to market, it's expected the pass itself loses a little value. It trades down just below 0.6 ETH, but it's starting to maybe see a stabilization and a little bit of a rebound. It's now up to 0.64 ETH. But let's see about that, because the fourth artist of that series, the fourth and final artist, is Jack Butcher. That news is out in the wild. We like Jack Butcher. So let's see what that does to the pass. Number seven, this is an interesting one. Call it the winds of Machi Big Brother. So we're talking about the winds of Yawanawa. That's the classic Rafik Anadol collection that has done so much good. He takes zero profit from that collection. His studio takes zero profit from that collection. All the primary and secondary sales, nothing goes to them. And there's been a ton of primary and secondary sales. But here's the thing. Machi Big Brother accumulated a ton of those wins. And he started to let a few go. So today he sold three wins, hitting offers of 697, 692, 666, WEETH. And the floor is down just under an ETH in that time frame to about 7.3. The curiosity here is this. That man owns 41 more wins of Yawanawa. So in a lot of ways holds the keys maybe to the immediate future. Not definitely not the long-term future. We know Rafik Anadol is going places. We know the long-term is secure. But the short-term, hey, 41 additions is a lot. And Machi does hold the keys right now. All right, three items left. Number eight, I promised two more artists. One of one multi-day streaks are intact for Cowboy Killer and Derek. Cowboy Killer sells two straight photography pieces yesterday and today. It's amazing to see. Derek sells four pieces within the past 8 days, five within the past 28 days. Amazing to see. Von Mises, one of those collectors over there. Last two items. I'm getting there, I promise. Blast from the Past, number nine. This one speaks to my heart. Jonathan Wolf, amazing artist in the space, dates back to 2020. In April of 21, a super rare piece named Blockchain Building came out. It's a one-of-one artwork that just resold for 8 ETH to OXNFT. That was special to see. And then the last piece is New News equals Old Discovery. It's a story as old as time. And artists Kim Asendorf and William Mapan. William Mapan, of course, with Sketchbook A in conjunction with Verse, just did amazing, amazing things. But the cool stuff when this happens is attention begets old discovery, meaning Asendorf and Mapan. You've seen collectors dive into their archives, into their back catalogs. You've seen successes within Strands of Solitude and Cargo and so many more of these collections. You've seen more collectors digging in and talking about it and storytelling. And it's always fun when that happens. End rant.
Love it. Love it. Oh my. Be careful, Roger, before I ask you to start doing this every single Wednesday. And actually, that is me officially asking you. I mean, I'm laughing, but yeah, I would love that because it was absolutely amazing and so needed. Thank you. Thank you. I can't thank you enough. You are absolutely welcome to stay here and chat with us, you know, throughout the entire space for sure.
Appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ovi, hello. Welcome to your third space of the day. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. How are you doing, Belle?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you. I am so excited to have you on. You know, I have had the pleasure of having on a lot of different people on the space from different walks of life. But to me, you are one of those that I consider big brain in the space, right? A thought leader to a completely different level, if I may say so myself. Not only are you considered, you know, a fantastic, amazing artist, successful artist in the space, but from a collector perspective, from a consumer perspective, from a participant perspective, you're also highly respected in the decisions that you make as a founder and the moves that you make within the space. I want to touch on a couple of different things on that. But before that, I laughed about it, but it's so true. You are a trader. You come from Wall Street. You're an artist. You're a founder. You're a fighter. What don't you do? And I would love for you to, you know, everybody that's listening here should know, again, just like they did with Roger, who you are. But I would love to hear a quick description from you. And I also want to ask you to give us three words that would describe yourself. What would you say that is?
Oh, wow. It, starting off with the difficult questions, that's a good one. Yeah, so I, a quick intro to myself. I used to work in finance, used to be a trader, did that for about 10 years. And I moved into the crypto and NFT space about a couple of years ago, just from buying my first bit of Bitcoin in January 2021. So I was kind of late to the game and then stumbled into NFTs and then just kind of fell in love with the space, really. So I've been kind of full-time in Web3 for the last couple of years. But, you know, as you mentioned, I have many interests across different parts of life. And I think I'm the kind of person that maybe sometimes struggles to focus on just one thing, because I like lots of different, things, and I like having a go at doing them. And I'm always, I think, the kind of person who likes to challenge themselves. So I feel like once I've done something well, then it's like, okay, what's the next thing that I can try and do? And let me think of something completely different. So I don't know if you ever read this book called Wind in the Willows, but there's a character in it called Toad who like moves from different hobby to hobby to hobby to hobby. And I think it's, I think I'm kind of like that to an extent, which is why I have my bio as Jack of all trades, but master of none. But three words to describe myself, that is a very tough one. I would say motivated is one of them. I think I'm just highly motivated in pretty much everything that I do, really. Like, I'm not really, I try not to do things like half-assed, if that makes sense. Second one I would use is wrecked, just because, you know, on the face of it, it may seem that, you know, I can go out there and doing lots of different things well, but everyone has setbacks in life. And for me, I feel like my best moments have always come after moments I've been wrecked in, whether it's been in work or personal life, whatever. I think that's something I feel quite strongly about as something that's like necessary for success. And I don't know. I think the last word I'd use to describe myself is relaxed. I think I'm a quite chilled, relaxed kind of guy. Like, I don't really dislike or hate anyone in the world. You know, I like to work hard, but I'm not like a task driver or any, by any means. And I genuinely just, you know, like meeting people and hanging out with people without having the need to have any ulterior motives or need to chill anything or anything like that. I just like conversations for conversation. So yeah, I'm actually definitely a pretty relaxed and chill person once you get to know me, I would say.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't surprise me, honestly, because in a world of, depending upon the day, euphoria or depression or uncertainty, right, which is this entire space, depending upon the day, like I said, you tend to have a very even keel, steady, kind of have fun with it, but take advantage of it and just kind of do what you have to do instead of get very anxious, or at least you don't demonstrate that, right, with the actions that you take or with the things that you say. I have had the pleasure of being able to tune into a lot of the GM radio shows as well as the Wrecked radio shows. And so I listen to you, and it's just a super relaxed voice.
I appreciate that. I do think I'm a big like mind over matter person, and I'm not someone who like really panics in tough situations. And I think that's important for, it's important in my old job as a trader, and it's also important in this world in crypto, because you go through big price gains and price drops, and you go through a lot of like mental turmoil. And I don't know, I've just always been of the belief that if you think something, then that can become your reality, and that can outweigh any sorts of like physical or real challenges that you may feel like you're facing. And that's something that I've really like consciously worked on that myself from maybe the age of like 17 or 18. And you know, like I went through some difficult times then. I'm just like, you know what, like I can sit here and be upset and kind of feel sorry for myself, or I can just be like, cool, this happened, but I'm just going to get on with it and work on things and work on like bouncing back from it. And I think my old job was like a really good way to test that character and develop those skills, because, you know, like I had, especially early in my career, I had moments where I just lost like so much money as a trader on things that maybe weren't even my fault or just got really unlucky. And it was like my first year as a trader straight out of university, and I lost like my entire year in November just because like one company defaulted and I had like the wrong position on. And you know, that's like a really, it's a big blow to take, because like, oh man, like what does my boss think of me, what does everyone think about me, like I'm the talk of the trading floor right now, like how do I bounce back from this? But like from that I realized it's like you take the blow, you kind of like get hit in the face, if you like, and then you, what's more important is your response and reaction to it, not like feeling down or feeling sorry for yourself. And I kind of fought myself out that corner, and I think that's something that I've always carried with me in life, and something that gives me confidence in myself. You know, it's just like I know that I feel strong enough mentally to like overcome anything. And then that's the thing, like when you have that confidence, it's like, oh, like, you know, 2022, oh my god, like ether's down 80%, what am I gonna do? And it's like, well, you know, as long as I realize that if I get everything stripped away from me and I literally go all the way back to zero, do I think I can bounce back from that? And the answer to myself is yes. So then I'm not worried about like things like that, you know. And I think that's the way I look at it. And it's just like someone sent out a tweet the other day, I don't know who it was, it's an older tweet actually, and it says a crack addict has the ability to wake up every day, somehow scrounge around for food, somehow get some cash and find themselves some crack and you know, survive and get on with it and like kind of live their life. And that's a super extreme example. I'm not like obviously advocating any of that, but you know, that's just like a massive extreme to most of our daily lives. And if that person is able to do it, then why can't we go out there and do what we want? So when I have that mentality, just like things that I think maybe seem bad to most people don't seem that bad to me, because I'm always putting it in that perspective or in that spectrum. And so it's just like, oh, you know, stuff down 25%. It's like, okay, cool, like whatever. Like it's not really going to make that much of a difference to my life. And at the same time, when the stuff is up 25%, when things are really good, I think it's important to practice prudence and not get too complacent or be overly joyous, because that's when you start to take your eye off the ball and mess things up. And if I think back to like where I've messed up in life, it's definitely been when I've become too overconfident or cocky or just like taking things for granted or being imprudent. And I think it's really, really important to manage your emotions at both ends of the spectrum, so you're just kind of like level through the whole thing. And I think when you have that mindset and mentality, it allows you to make the best decisions you can for yourself. And that's what I was told myself when I used to be a trader. It's what I tell myself when I make my trading or investment decisions now. But I think that applies to all walks of life. And it's something that I'm like always consciously trying to tell myself, like, just be level-headed, like, just be level-headed, like, don't get too excited, don't get too down, just be level-headed. And then people will tell you you're a robot and have zero emotions, but that's another story.
You have a lot of experience coming from Wall Street, you know, of actually being a trader and having a very, having a lot of pressure on you, like at all the time. What are your thoughts about you coming to Web3 and you see that a big percentage of the people that are here are so-called traders that learn from YouTube videos, that learn from influencers, that learn from other places that are not, you know, with any experience, like not ever having formal experience or traditional experience or any tradition, any experience whatsoever. And I'm asking you from two perspectives, one from like the traditional or professional trader point of view, but also as a founder. One of the hardest things in the space that founders talk about is the expectation from a lot of their holders of, you know, price go up, without truly understanding the dynamics that go behind it, or truly understanding the business that goes behind it, or the fact that just like the stock market, it goes up, it goes down, it goes back up, you know? So I'm super curious on just like your general take on the people that we have here that operate on that mentality, on that wheelhouse of, you know, price go up 100% and I will take absolutely nothing else, even though they have no experience outside of that.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think most people who still work in finance or still work at investment banks or professional traders will tell you, these guys trading crypto or trading NFTs or trading GameStop or meme stocks or whatever, they have no idea what they're doing. They're kind of stupid and they're kind of dumb. They're not educated. Like, that's a very overbearing kind of like sentiment from Wall Street and even like the banks here in London as well. And I think, you know, like when I used to work in the bank, I used to think that too. Like, it's why it took me so long to get into crypto. Because I was like, well, you know, how can these guys know what they're doing when I, you know, have a mathematical degree and spent 7 to 8 years in this industry and I'm speaking to like the world's largest asset managers and all that kind of stuff. Like, how can these people have an edge over me? And that's just like, I think that's just a very human way to think. Like, that's a logical way to think, but I think that's the wrong way to think, you know? And I kind of got wise to that in probably the last year of my career when I saw this stuff like GameStop, I saw this stuff in NFTs and Bitcoin. You're sitting there and you're like, wow, like, you know, these kids who are like 18 or 19 are just out there making hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars. And yeah, you can sit there on your trading floor and in Goldman Sachs and say, these guys are all dumb. But at the end of the day, you know, you're sitting there working 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And you're tied to a corporation and getting paid in stock, while some guy who has no experience compared to you is out there like making more money than you, right? So something there doesn't really add up. And I think what I realized is to be a good trader, you don't really actually need a degree in economics or maths or finance. You don't need to have spent 10 years on a trading floor. You don't need to be like a super genius mathematician. Yeah, you need to be a little bit numerate. You need to be comfortable with numbers. But the biggest skills of being a successful trader, I think, are the soft skills, the emotional skills, the ability to understand when you have a good trade and when to take risk, the ability to be disciplined and manage your risk. And as I mentioned at the beginning, when I talked about emotions and staying level-headed, it is the ability to stay level-headed and control your emotions and, you know, not get too down and not get too excited and all that kind of stuff. And these are all soft skills, right? These are all just human skills. And I do believe some of these skills are inherent to personalities that you can't really train. I think like some people are well cut out for it and I think some people aren't. And these aren't things you can, like, you don't learn that when you go to university. You don't even really learn it on the job, to be honest with you. Like, I spent 10 years at an investment bank and every time we got a grad, like, sometimes someone would be good and they would make it and they would do well. Sometimes they wouldn't and they would leave after 1 or 2 years. And that would be the same for all traders, basically. So what I would say is I've seen plenty of traders in the space from people trading crypto, NFTs, whatever, who have zero experience in trading. And I think some of them would actually, if you put them on a trading desk on Wall Street and you gave them like 6 months of training, I think they would outperform many, many traders on Wall Street, because you just see people have a natural appetite for taking risk, a natural appetite to understand when something might go up, when something might go down, and the ability to be able to, you know, cover their risk and move on to the next trade, etc. So I don't sit here now thinking, oh, everyone here is dumb and I'm smart just because I worked in the bank for 10 years. I don't believe that at all. And I actually think you have lots of very smart, natural traders in the space who, if anything, are taking even more risk than those guys, because you don't, you know, when you, if you're trading here full time, you're not getting paid a salary, you're not getting a bonus, you're doing it with your own capital, you're taking more risk than anyone sitting at an investment bank, a lot more risk. And as a result, there's a lot more return. I think there's a big return to be had in this crypto space. And I think a lot of people out there are doing well. So, you know, if anyone here is listening and you're just like a, you know, starting out trying to trade for yourself and you get told, oh, you're not going to make it, or, you know, you don't have a history in this or education in this or training in this. And to be honest with you, I think that's all bollocks, really. I think you will know for yourself if you're good or not, and you don't need any form of training or to spend any money to figure out if it's for you or not.
I love that. It speaks a lot to the importance of creator economy, right? Here in Web3 space, we have so many creators that live off of this, that learned it from this. And as technology continues, the creator economy just continues to evolve with it, to where now, you know, people don't want to purchase from companies. People want to purchase from people, from other people that they trust, that they believe in. And that goes from anything from shoes to clothes to learning how to trade. Because if so-and-so can do it, and it's a real life person, then so can I. So it's a completely different way of thinking. And I think that your way of thinking is what caused the flexibility to go from, you know, traditional banks to jumping into crypto and buying your first Bitcoin in January 2021, right?
Yeah, that's right. It was, you know, January 21 wasn't the first time I'd heard about Bitcoin. I actually first heard about it in 2012 when I was in Thailand, and someone was telling me about Silk Road and how you can like order assassinations and drugs and all that kind of stuff from it. And I just didn't think it was anything real. But, you know, 2016, 2017, 2018, I had people telling me about Bitcoin. Even 2020, like, you know, my friends and my brother-in-law was like, oh, you should buy Bitcoin. And I was like, no, like, I don't want to buy it because I know more than these people about investing in financial assets, and these people are all wrong. It's going to go to zero one day. So it took me years to get over that mindset and get over that mental hurdle. And then finally in January 21, I was like, okay, let me just give this a go. And it basically changed my life. But that's what makes me like super bullish on crypto as a whole, especially with this whole like BlackRock ETF stuff. Like BlackRock have gone through that whole, Larry Fink's gone through that whole process as well. Like, you know, you saw them talking about, and many financial institutions talking about the whole crypto space negatively. And guess what? They're all trying to get involved now, because it just takes a bit of time for things to click for people, I think. And I just feel like I know what I went through with regard to being super crypto skeptic and then completely doing a U-turn. And I know many people, former colleagues and friends who still work in banks, who have that same mindset. And eventually, I think their mindsets will change and will turn. And I think there's lots of smart people out there who will...
This space was downloaded via spacesdown.com. Visit to download your spaces today.
Eventually change and see the light, which I think is really constructive for crypto, because it means there are lots of potential buyers out there who are not yet involved and are still yet to buy their first Bitcoin or ETH or even NFT.
You had a long post that I really enjoyed, and it was talking about how you bought first in 2021 and you thought that by then it was already late, and perhaps maybe it's not so late, because there are always those crypto curious who eventually make the jump, right? Last week, I want to remind everybody that it feels like an eternity ago, but it was just last week that the fake news came out from Cointelegraph, in which they talked about the ETF and it did, you know, it ended up being fake news, but the price pumped and then it went back down. And then this week we actually did have some God candles and green absolutely everywhere. And the euphoria is back. And you talked about, Ovi, in your post about how there is always going to be that one person out there, or those several people out there, that are having that moment and jumping in. So you know, perhaps you weren't laid, perhaps we're actually early. Can you expand on that? I would love to hear you talk about the concept of being early or late into the crypto space.
Yeah, I think in 2021, I used to get frustrated because people would always say, we're early, we're so early, the world hasn't woken up to this yet. And it's like, yeah, I guess, but then like, you know, crypto, Bitcoin's already been around for 8 to 9 years. So how early can you be if something's been around for almost a decade? That's kind of how I felt for a while. It's like, yeah, we're early, but are we really that early? And then obviously when everything sold off, et cetera, it's like, oh, maybe we actually weren't that early and the rest of the world doesn't care. But I think for me, being early isn't about being at the, at least in the world of crypto, and to be honest with you, to an extent, just financial markets as a whole, I think for me, being early doesn't just mean, oh, I was there at the start of this technology being created or invented, or, you know, I was the first person to buy this thing at ICO or whatever it is. I think for me, being early is actually about being early to the cycle. And I'm a big believer in cycles. Like, financial markets have moved in cycles for the past century. It's just like a mathematically proven thing. And it just makes sense. Like, you know, you have booms and busts, and it will just repeat itself over and over again. The question really is, how long are those cycles? Is it a 1 year cycle? Is it a 2 year cycle? Is it a 4 year cycle? We don't really know. So I think with regard to crypto, it's the same thing. Like, crypto has been around for what, 10, 12 years or something. And there seems to be a lot of like correlation of crypto cycles to the Bitcoin halving. For whatever reason, that seems to also just tie in and match up quite nicely with macro cycles as well. So for me, being early isn't really like, oh, I'm early to Bitcoin. That's not the way you should think about it. It should be, I'm early to the next cycle. And that's how I'm thinking about it right now. And in 2021, I was like, oh, I wish I was here just 6 months earlier, because I could have bought all this stuff like way, way lower and would have made like way more money in trading it. And now in 2023, I feel like I am there. I am at that 6 months earlier stage, because I think we are at the start of this new cycle. Like, we've had a 2 year bear market, which is one of the longest, I think it's probably the longest crypto bear market. I'm not sure. Maybe someone check me on that. But, you know, most bear markets within equities kind of only really last for a year. And we've seen equities rally substantially this year and outperform crypto to an extent in some cases, like beta adjusted. And so it just feels like naturally crypto should be next. And we have all the positive catalysts. We have the Bitcoin halving coming next year. We have the ETF approvals on the line. And you have potential rate cuts as well next year as well. So it just feels like we're at the beginning of this cycle. And, you know, when everyone else comes in, when retail comes in, when normal people come in, they come in when they hear about people making a lot of money. And that's maybe not quite yet. Maybe we're starting to see that, because people are now seeing headlines that, oh, Bitcoin's now at a 17-month high because the ETF applications might be approved and BlackRock getting involved. Like, should we get involved? Should I look at crypto again? And lo and behold, some people are now revisiting Bitcoin. But then you'll start to see the same thing for ETH. And then maybe you'll see like some meme coin loads of people make money on. Like, Doge was the big headline grabber last time. And when you start to get those stories about people making lots of money, that's when you get the normies and the retail people start to come in and think, oh, I have to get involved in crypto again. Like, people are making money. How do I make money? I want to get involved. And that's kind of what brought me in. Like, I eventually caved into that. And it's probably what brought in most of us here, I would say. And whether people want to admit it or not, that's, you know, probably the truth. And I don't think we're there yet. And we're not quite there yet, but you're starting to see signs of it. And that's why I think, in my opinion, right now, we are early to this cycle. I think we're right at the beginning of it. Maybe the last few months were like the very beginning of it, but it's very, very early. And I think if things go the right way and the way that I'm anticipating, I think you could see much, much, much higher prices and much more participation in this market. And now, if you've stuck it out for 2 years, you know, now's the opportunity to start reaping the rewards and positioning yourself in the way that you want to be positioned. And it's important to remember, like, it feels like an echo chamber where we are, because, you know, 2 years into a bear market, there's not very many people left. And you're just seeing the same people over and over again tweet on the timeline. So whenever it feels too euphoric, and I think people want to fade that sometimes, you have to understand there's about 200 of us or 1,000 of us, whatever, who are all feeling too euphoric. And that's a tiny number versus the potential investor base in this asset class, a very, very tiny number, like 0.01% or whatever it is. So it's important not to just get stuck in our bubble and think about the bigger picture, I think. So, you know, by all those things, I do feel like we are very early.
Do you think that we're poised to have a meme coin season again?
You know what? I really think so. I think, you know, obviously you've seen the price action on Pepe. I think when Bitcoin rallies and you know, ETH's been lagging a little bit, but when the majors rally, I think crypto native people are so desperate to like outperform those majors. And I think they're so desperate to like own things that could potentially make them a 50x or 100x. And if you're looking for that stuff, it's always in the meme coin world, because it's, you know, those kind of moves are like illogical, and meme coins are illogical by investor standards. You can't really explain them. You can't really analyze them. There's no models you can use to, you know, to back up prices or values or that kind of stuff. And then they just do like 100x and, you know, in return. And people are like, I don't understand that. And I think crypto native people and people who've been in this market for a while understand that that's where like the big returns are. It's obviously where the biggest risk is as well, because many meme coins will go to zero and many of them often get rugged and they just don't last. But every time you see these moves and like Bitcoin rallies, and then like you start to see Pepe rally because people want to make the extra return, then you start to see this smaller meme coins rally. I think that's because people are now smart to it and want to deploy their capital in that in that manner. So I do, you know, I do think if Bitcoin holds here and, you know, manages to stay within like the 33 to 35 or 36K range, I do really believe you'll start to see altcoins rally. I think ETH will catch up. I think some of the other L1s will catch up. And then naturally, I think you'll start to see a lot of activity in meme coins again. And, you know, a lot of them, some of them will do well. But, you know, it's important to remember with meme coins, like it is like being at the casino, and you will probably, like, I've lost way more money. Well, I've lost, in terms of the number of trades, I've lost money on more meme coins than I've made on meme coins. But the ones that you make money on are the ones that do a 50x or 100x. So they kind of like outweigh those losses. But yeah, it's important to remember that, like, all that stuff is like super, super risky and a massive gamble. So I would only ever, you know, bet or trade with money on that stuff that you're happy to lose.
Yeah, it's a tough call, right? Because that is where you make the majority of the money. Aside from Pepe, we know that you know, Pepe Maxi over here, which I have a moon bag on that, so I'm super excited about that. What else are you looking at?
Yeah, I only really own, so I own, obviously I own a lot of Pepe, and I kind of got into it a bit too early. So, you know, I think I'm still down versus my average price, but I believe in that one because I just think it's a very well-known meme that I think can rival the dog coins. And there's been other Pepe coins in the past, but for whatever reason, that just seems to be the main one that's listed on all the exchanges and stuff. So I really like that as a like a super risky high beta play. The other one I own is this coin called Mog, which is kind of a bit of a left field random one. But I really like that too. I think that the community on that one is very like cult-like. And I think investing in things that are cult-like is a good strategy. It's a good method. It's like cults don't just die. They just exist forever. Basically, that's the first thing. The second thing is people who are in cults don't really care about like the making money aspect of things or like taking profits or whatever. And like naturally, there are some people like that. But people in cults are just like, oh, I just really believe in this cult to the point where it's irrational human behavior. And so I'm never going to sell this thing because like, I just don't even care about it. Like, I just want to like be in it for this cult. And I think that's really important. And like, you know, like Bitcoin is a cult. Bitcoin started off as a cult and it got its value through very cult-like behavior. That's how it did really well. Dogecoin is a very similar thing. And you can even say that about some NFT projects. Like, they're very, very cult-like. And so I think the same thing applies to meme coins, where it's like, this cult is too strong to die. And with Mog, I kind of like watched it go all the way to 40 million market cap and it dropped all the way down to like 8 million, I think. But just the cult-like behavior of people in that community never really changed or faded. So that gave me kind of some encouragement to be like, oh yeah, you know, I want to stick with this because I think if these guys can survive like going up 500%, then down 95% and then, you know, bounce back and just the vibes are always intact, if that makes sense, I think it can do well. So I think like, you know, if you're looking for meme coins to hold, definitely look for that cult like aspect of it, because that's when you get you know, weird returns and supernatural, you know, price action that you shouldn't really get, because people are being irrational, basically.
What were your thoughts? Like, did you expect it on your bingo card that Obama's half brother would be pushing MOG this week and actually having an upcoming Twitter Spaces?
That honestly, it's one of the it's one of the weirdest and funniest things that I've ever seen. I still don't even really know what to make of it. I guess like his brother hates Obama or now dislikes Obama. I'm not really sure. He's always posting about Trump 2024. So maybe there's some political aspects to it as well that I'm not completely in full understanding of. But yeah, he sees some weird things in the space, and that was pretty crazy for sure.
So this is the half brother who I think posted the birth certificate, has always hated Obama, has made it a point to be outspoken, etc. And he is having a Twitter Spaces with MOG this Friday. So I'm definitely gonna be looking at the price action because I'm curious, you know, I'm curious to see how much it moves. But speaking of cult, let's not get off of that subject, because I want to see your perspective, and we have a really good question. How do you think one builds that cult-like community? Red Guy is one of those. From outside looking in, Red Guy, I've always wanted to have one because it is like a cult-like community. Those that are in love it, you know, and speak so highly of the community. And it's almost like a stable coin. I mean, it just goes steady. You continue to accumulate more and more for yourself, or well, not for yourself, but for the community, right, in the vault. And it just, it's such a strong community. What do you think, somebody that's starting to build out their own community or looking to join one, what are some of those things as a founder, as a leader, that you make sure to include?
The thing about cults and trying to achieve that is I think it's something that can't really be forced. So I don't think you can just wake up tomorrow and say, oh, I'm going to start a cult, because the reason why they work is because they are organic, and sometimes you just get lucky and hit a note that resonates with lots of people, and then things form, you know, organically. And for Rec Guy, like it was never really meant to be what it is today. It was just like an idea that I had because it was a recurring character in my artwork, and I was like, oh, it'd be cool to be a PFP project. And I made it a free mint, which I think kind of stated that I had no real plans for it, and it took me about 5 or 6 months to do because I just spent my evenings and weekends working on it kind of like for fun. And just when we launched it, the markets all crashed and everything, and I think people were like, oh, this kind of just makes sense. It kind of hit just captured a moment in time that I think everyone could resonate with. And now it is what it is today, because like this idea of being wrecked is evergreen within crypto culture. It doesn't really matter if it's a bull market or a bear market. You are always going to get wrecked somehow. Like in a bull market, you might buy the top of some random meme coin and then lose your money, or you might click on a phishing link and have your wallet drained. There's so many different ways you can trip up. And that's true of not just being in crypto, but just true of life really. And, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, like I've definitely had like bad moments in my life, but I think you're not meant to just like pretend they didn't exist, or I think you're not meant to shy away from them. I don't think you're meant to just not acknowledge them. I think you're meant to respect them and have them as like little cornerstones of your life that build you into who you are today. And I think that's what Rec Guy's about, really. Like, it's like, you know what? Because like in my head, there's like so many different like cute fairy animal PFP projects. There's so many of them. I was like, oh man, this is like so boring, because that's not really what life is about. Like, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. Like, life is tough and it's hard, and it doesn't mean you have to like pretend it isn't. Like, I think you're meant to just accept it and live it and be it. And I think that's what, for me, that's what Rec Guy is about. It's kind of like a personification of those ideologies. And I guess it's something that just resonated with a lot of people. Like, I realized that I wasn't the only person that thought that way about life. There are many people that are, who are just like, oh, I just, whatever. Like, I just put in 500 bucks since meme coin went to zero. Like, oh, it's not the end. It's bad. But it's not the end of the world. And we can laugh about it and move on, because I'll make it back on something else. And I think you know, especially in this world of crypto where people are degenerating and that kind of stuff, it just hit the right note. But as advice for people, I think founders and projects and people who want to start communities, I think the most important thing is to like make something that is genuine to yourself. Like I think Brett Guy has worked because Brett Guy is really just like me in a profile picture project, if that makes sense. And so anything I do that's Brett Guy related, I can just be genuine and just be myself and not worry about whether it comes across as positive or negative, or not worry about the messaging, because I think people respect that and are in it for that. So when you create a project and you start a community, you want people to realize you're being genuine, but you have to make sure you yourself are honest with yourself and you are being genuine and you're doing something that you actually enjoy and actually believe in. Because if you don't, it becomes very hard to sustain it and very hard to keep it alive. And we've seen that with many NFT projects where people just found to just give up and they're just like, oh, I messed up. And maybe they didn't have ill intentions, but they realized they just couldn't keep it going. And so you just have to make sure like it's your community is something that reflects you, something that you are passionate about, and something that you feel like you can just do for the rest of your life. And for Rec Guy, I mean, I don't know what it means to do Rec Guy for me, but I know that I can and will do Rec Guy for the rest of my life because I'm just being me in it, basically.
You've been able to tie in both worlds, like, you know, the founder side, the business side, along with your art side, which I think is amazing because it is you, right? The totality of it is you. Speaking on the artist side, though, who inspires you?
Yeah, there are, I think there are three guys that I really like, three artists I really like. One of them is XCopy, and I'm probably not the only person to say that, I'm sure, but I just think... he's also a London-based artist. I think I just love his ability to capture memes and moments in time and put things out that are crypto relevant. I just think it's incredible. And obviously visually, it's very striking. And he's definitely been a huge influence on things that I've done in the art space. Another one is Alpha Centauri Kid. I just think in terms of performance art and the way that he does his drops and puts out his work, I think is incredible. And I think there are very few artists where his stuff, like I can like see pieces of him in his art, which sometimes I feel like maybe not everyone gets, but I just feel like I get it. I don't really know how to explain it. And his emotion and like pain or whatever it is really comes through on his pieces. And I just think it's just so powerful. I think it's amazing every time I see something he puts out. And the third one is Die With The Most Likes, who I kind of came across maybe about a year ago or 10 months ago. I think he's another guy just like, it just captures, like things that are so hard hitting in his art that provokes a reaction. And I'm a believer that good art, and art's subjective obviously, but I think good art is art that provokes a reaction. And you just can't look at one of Dai's pieces without feeling something, whether it's positive or negative or disgust or joy or laughter. You will like look at his stuff and you will feel an emotion. And I think that's brilliant. I think that's the main thing about art for me.
Die With The Most Likes is one of the most interesting characters and artists that I've come across recently. And you're right. Absolutely everything that he puts out is thought-provoking, emotion-provoking. What do you think, a traditional artist that look at the space and see something like that, does it make it easier or does it make it harder to onboard newer artists that maybe struggle with the digital art aspect?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it makes it, I don't know if it's a question of like makes it easier or harder. It's a tough one to judge there. I think in my opinion, the way NFTs work really well and the way a lot of digital art in the space works really well is when you create something that feels like it's native to the space, whether that's creating generative art that's created by code or stored on chain, like that's very native to the space. Whether it's depicting crypto memes or just memes in general, like that's native to the space. So I think the application of like, oh, I've just kind of like, I'm a really good painter in real life and I've just painted something on an iPad and I put it out there. It's like, yeah, if it's really good, then, you know, people might buy it. But the nature of buyers who want to collect NFTs, I think generally most people want to collect things that feel like they're native to the space. And I do believe we're at the start of this digital renaissance, and it's going to, you know, you have this ability to collect things that really mark this time. But I think you have to collect things that show this time. And so, like, you know, you can buy an X copy piece from 2020, which talks about like COVID and crypto. And in 25 years' time, you'll look back at that and you'll think, oh, like, yeah, that piece makes sense. Like, that piece really captures 2020 and captures this whole movement. And it makes sense that it's an NFT because it's commenting on crypto culture. You could buy a piece that's like, you know, a beautiful painting of flowers or something that's an NFT, and it might look amazing, but in 25 years' time, you know, how does that stand out or mark a moment in time or use the NFT application in a way where it needed to be used? It doesn't really. And that might come across as quite harsh, and that's certainly not my intention, but I do think that's what like the real buyers are looking for when they think about pieces that could have value in the future.
Roger, before we move on from art, this is your wheelhouse. Do you have anything to add to that?
Can you reframe that?
Yeah, no, the original question, I think, is more like we were talking about DAI, right? DAI with the most likes. And it always interests me that as time has gone on and, you know, I've been in the space, the traditional artists that come into the space still kind of struggle with the digital art aspect. But DAI with the most likes, to me, represents what we would see in the trad art world, which is emotion and thought-provoking, which you already do see it in so many ways. But this is one that has recently popped up in the NFT space that's like, in your face, I am forcing you to have an emotion, right? And so I'm just curious what your take would be. What does a traditional artist that, you know, has been playing around with the digital art, is that something that would say, is something that I can embrace a little bit more or not? Or does it not impact it at all? Just curious.
Yeah, I'll go two places with this. So number one, the first word that comes to my mind is time. I just think we need more time, and like a lot more time. I think that, you know, crypto culture, I think OSF, you're spot on in saying like, are we early? Maybe not so much, but are we early to cycles? Of course. But like in general, we are early to art, right? To this as an accepted form of art. And we're absolutely seeing, you know, eventually it's just art, right? We have this conversation of like, is digital art art? Of course it is. Like we all know that, of course, like period. But not everyone knew that. And I think more and more and more people are coming around, and eventually it's just all going to be considered art and everything will be a medium within it. But time, like just decade. I know that sounds maybe cringe, but like decades of time to get to that outcome. And I do think artists that we're talking about today help that along. And I think the slow, sometimes fast, but overall slow, like rates of acceptance, that'll all run its course. And the other artist I would point to that I know is, I mean, you know, at the tippy top of popularity, but it actually, all this conversation and where you went with OSF brought this to my mind. Beeple, but not for his overarching, you know, not his overarching massive on the wall of his studio piece, but a specific piece. And it's his Everyday's Raw. And right now, so I guess to frame that up for people, so obviously there's a $69 million Beeple piece that has all of his Everyday's. There is a piece that went alongside that was that 100 collectors have for a dollar. And that's a side-scrolling piece that includes highlights from his overall Everyday's. But there's another piece. I think it's one of his best, one of my favorites. I'm biased. It's every single one of his 2020 artworks. And so hearing you talk about that, my mind went there because I look back at that piece now in 2023, and it's every single day of him marking 2020. What was 2020? That, of course, was COVID, right? Right. For many of us, that rocked us, that rocked our lives, whether it rocked us physically and healthfully, mortality-wise, maybe it's someone you knew, but it definitely rocked our behavior patterns and what was societally acceptable and how we ran our everydays. And I look at that scroll of every single day of 2020 and it hits me over the head like a sledgehammer. It's just so, you know, I mean, maybe not the most positive year, but it is still so cool to reflect on that. So need time. I would double down on the artists that OSF mentioned. I absolutely think things will come around. And those types of pieces that mark moments, I think will be look back on very, very fondly.
I love that. I was at Beeple Studio for the Punks meetup, I guess a month ago already. And the art that he has in the restrooms, if you've ever been there, was definitely a discussion point for when you left the restrooms. There were people that had taken pictures of it. There were people that were talking about it. It was definitely one of those, did you see what was on there? And it made me feel this, and it made me think that, you know? And so definitely, Beeple is one of those thought-provoking artists in the space. OSF, I want to, we're at the hour, so I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but Fight Night is coming up, November 24th, as part of Crypto Fight. And then you also released some art that Roger talked about. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so I've boxed before. I've always been super into boxing. My favorite film is Rocky, the whole series basically, and that's one of the things that I watched when I was younger. To like that thing has been had a big influence on my life because it kind of trains you to think about things in a certain way, and you know, be an underdog and you know, achieve things that are maybe seem unrealistic to people, and just mind over matter. So that's always been a big theme in my life. And I, you know, when I was young, a few years ago, I was like, let me just try my hand at actually boxing, because it's one thing to challenge yourself mentally, but it's another thing to challenge yourself physically, and getting in the ring with someone and getting punched, etc., is a very difficult thing to do. So I did it a few years ago, and then that, you know, that's kind of it, really. Kind of won the fight and moved on. But there's a thing called Crypto Fight Night, and they just get people within crypto to box basically, and this is their third year of doing it. So they asked me if I was interested to fight, and my initial thoughts were no. Like, you know, I don't really want to go back to doing it because it's a lot of effort. But boxing is kind of like tattoos. And if anyone out there who has tattoos, you probably knows this. Like, when you're having it done, you're just like, why am I doing this? Like, no one asked me to do this. It's so painful. Like, I brought this pain on myself. Like, why? And then a few weeks later, a few months later, you're like, oh, damn, like, I really want to do that again. And I want another tattoo. They're very addictive. And I think boxing is the same thing. I just want to do it again. I'm not really sure why, but I want to. So I said yes, and so I'll be fighting in the Crypto Fight Night, which is on the 24th of November in Dubai. And I've been training pretty hard for it, actually. I've been training for the last 2 months now for it, and we're entering the final month of training. But I wanted to create some art around it because I just like creating art around things that I'm doing and the things that are personal to me or things that I'm going through. And so I was like, well, what do I do? Do I just make a boxing one of one? Do I make some additions? You know, I haven't really made anything larger for a while. And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be cool if I could like gamify it a little bit and make it a bit interesting? So what I decided to do is create, I will create 9 different editions, and each edition will dictate or resemble a potential outcome in the fight. So the first one that I released yesterday was me winning by a first round knockout. You know, the next one will be my opponent winning by a first round knockout. Some of them might be a third round knockout. Some of them might be a tie. It might be me winning on points. But each edition will resemble a different outcome of the fight. And if you hold the edition that ends up being the correct outcome, there will be a final bonus edition that you will be able to win. And the idea is that I'll make, you know, the current editions are all kind of like single colored, and they're not super complex pieces. They're animated, but they're kind of, I don't want to say basic. I think basic is the wrong word, but they're not like, I think they're not jaw dropping, if that makes sense. And so I want to make the final edition really, really good. Like something that I would believe myself to be like one of one quality, and, you know, something I would hold back for like the best thing. And that's the one that's going to be the winning edition if you hold the edition that ends up being the correct outcome. So I just thought it would be fun to like kind of gamify it a little bit and make it a bit more interesting and give people some skin in the game, you know, going into fight night. Like, I like speculating and gambling and all that kind of stuff as well. I'm a DJ just as much as anyone else is, and I know people will be betting on the fight as well, but I thought it'd be cool to kind of inscribe some art aspect into it as well, just to commemorate it.
I pinned it up to the top. I think that the art is super cool, so different, you know, simple and yet yeah, just different and eye-catching. So I love the fact that you gamified it. It's an entire experience from a spectator, also as a collector, also as a just watching you go through it. It's a whole experience that you're building for everybody. So congratulations on even putting yourself out there, right? On going through this training. I cannot imagine any of that. So rooting for you from afar. You have to let us know how that goes. We'll be watching. It's going to be streamed, right? It'll be live?
Yeah, it will be streamed. I think the streaming details will come out soon. But yeah, you'll be able to watch it for free online.
That's such a D-gen thing for all of us that are in the space that love to do those things.
I just have to make sure I don't make a fool of myself now because so many people will be watching.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, then you can book round two, right? So there you go.
Exactly.
Yep. Well, listen, it has been amazing having you on the show. Such a pleasure to be able to speak to you. I have a true, tremendous admiration for everything that you've been able to build and just for being such a nice person. Ovi, I bumped into you one day. I don't know if you probably remember.
In Austin, right?
In Austin, exactly. Yeah. And it was like you were walking. I think you were with Farouk and you guys were kind of, in the middle of the conversation and you always have this thing, right? Where you don't want to be too intrusive, but like the person is literally walking in front of you. How could you say not? How could you not say anything? And yet, how could you interrupt the conversation? I had this whole internal conversation with myself, right? And I approached you. and you were like the nicest. Let's take a picture. How are you? You're going to the event tonight. So anyway, continue being a nice person in the space. What we have inside of our hearts is truly what leads us to the next phases of our life and what people see, for any interactions that they have with you. And for that, I want to say that you're one of those people that I admire in the space, not just for your success, but also for your heart. So continue being you. And thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything that we can support you with that I haven't already asked?
No, I think you've covered everything. Thanks a lot for your very lovely and kind comments. And thanks everyone for listening. I know I see a lot of like rec guys and tabs and people from my community in the audience. So I'm always super grateful for everyone showing up to support. And let's hope I'm right. And we're at the start of this great big bull run and we all do well for ourselves in the next few months. Fingers crossed.
Let's go. Fingers crossed. I have a lot of vacation plans that I need to get on. So, Roger, I want to ask you the same thing. How can we support you?
Thanks for asking. For number one, get involved in the report, in the report, in the conversation, like that reporting and conversing side of me, right? Every day looking to make that report better and better and better. And so many community members have leaned in. Hey, what do you think about this? Maybe a section for that. I can't make every edit that people suggest, or I can't include everything people suggest, but I do give thought to each and everything. And it's just helping make a better end product that, I'm flattered that people are getting use out of it. So let's go. And the same thing on the spaces, just like yours, Monday, 1 o'clock PM Eastern is the report oriented spaces. Thursday, 1 o'clock Eastern is the future of art, more like conversational, what's happening now, usually with an artist or an innovator in the space, kind of like you do as well. Have a great one this Thursday. So I hope people join. And that's about it. Leave you with that on that side of things. And I just want to say, OSF, finish training strong, man. I'm a fight fan. I can't wait to see it. I am the one NFT that has been released officially. I am rooting for that outcome and it would be a classic. So if I could just ask a quick question to you, man, do you have the punching power to get that done?
I think I do. Yeah, I think I do. We'll see. We'll see.
Let's go. Good luck, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You better now that we're all here and
Yeah, I've really set myself up here, haven't I?
Exactly. That's a definite hell yes. Yes, I do have the punching power for that. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is If You Know, You Know. I am Belle NFTs, and each week I'm joined by amazing speakers and topics that we have lined up for you. Next week, we have Luca joining us. I cannot wait to have that conversation. Every Wednesday, 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, make sure that you're following OSF. Make sure that you're following Roger. Make sure that you're following us at NFT Girl and my personal account, Bell NFTs. So if you didn't know, now you know. See you guys next week. Have an amazing week, everybody. Bye.